part was done by Donna Taylor, and this is Laura Smale. The date is May 4th, 1978.
May
3. May, oh, still, is it? And we're going to be talking largely about the building program.
I think you started last time, Laura, by asking me what it meant, what a letter meant that I wrote to Bill Sewell probably in 1968. I was then a member of the university committee, and I'd been appointed to the campus planning committee as the university committee representative. And I thought it was I thought the setup was kind of terrible, so I wrote a little letter and told him I thought it was a bad kind of a setup. And that's what I think you must have run across in the archives,
it
that
was,
letter.
Yes, and it was very interesting to me. And I would like to come to that, but I guess I'd like to ask you first what your views had been of the campus planning and the building program in general from the time you arrived here until you started getting involved. You, as just as a faculty member, you must have had opinions about it.
Well, I hate to disappoint you, but I suppose I didn't know anything at all about it, or never thought very much about it. I mean, we were always aware of things going on around the campus that presumably are the result of planning, and I'm sure there must have been some newspaper comment or other comment about the campus planning committee and so on, but as far as the notion of what they did or how it was set up or anything like that, I don't suppose I had any idea at all. I got into it mostly when I got on the university committee, and at that time there was a representative of the university committee, there still is, on the campus planning committee, and I was one of the six members, and they appointed Gene Cameron, no, I guess Jim Philamont at that time appointed me as the representative, university committee representative on the campus planning committee. That's the first time I'd been to a meeting, known anything about it or anything.
Had you had any reaction to all the buildings that were going up? Had you thought that's too many, or were they in the wrong place? Or?
Well, yes. I guess I, see, I came here a long time ago when there was a good deal more open space on the campus, when it was, when it deserved much more the feeling that it was one of the most beautiful campuses, you know, because we had these nice wide slopes with the oak trees and nice things. What they were doing was to, every place there was a vacant spot, why they would cut down the trees and put up a building. And it always seemed to me that instead of filling up all the blank spaces on the campus first before you move out, it would have been better to move out, spread out first, and try to keep some of the open spaces. Mm-hmm. And I guess I didn't, except for that kind of an emotional reaction to an offhand, uninformed judgment about it, I didn't know anything much about it. I'd been here as a student, and I knew where a lot of these open slopes were, and places where you went out and sat and studied or had picnics and all kinds of things on the campus. And those were beginning to go about the time I got here, and have continued to. So I had that kind of reaction, but no, I wouldn't say anything else.
A lot of people felt that way.
Now this was 68, of course, and while we'd done some of the building, we hadn't gotten into, I don't believe at the time we'd gotten into the, I guess the humanities, I don't believe the humanities building was up at that time, was it?
Well,
or was it starting?
No, if they started to break ground for that in 54, I think it was.
Oh, did they?
52. So that was...
Well, I had some reactions to the humanities building as soon as they did that.
What was that?
Well, I knew about it first because I guess at the time I was president of the faculty credit union, and we had an office there, and we had to get out of it. So we were pretty much involved with this kind of moving.
Mm-hmm.
And then they opened up that space, leveled it, and then for a long time didn't do anything. And then they started to build this building, about which we had no particular notions. We didn't know anything about the plans.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed to take forever and ever and ever to get it beyond the stage where it looked, it looked like Grand Coulee Dam or something, you know.
Yeah.
wasn't any building there. It was just chunks of concrete for a long time. So. We made a lot of pretty snide remarks about about that kind of building on campus.
I guess it was completed in 1968. That's what I have down here. So
it, so it was there.
It was in process,
so we've gone through that. Well, I remember having very doubtful impressions of the whole thing from that period. It did take a long time to do it. And I think there was a lot of talk at the time about the cost overruns and the delays and this kind of thing. So it didn't seem like the best project that we'd ever done on the campus. Mm-hmm. And of course, it had not done the other one, Pilots Hall at all at that stage. That came along, and that so there was quite a little building after this, or it was just getting started.
Yes, there's a great chunk in there, really right through.
Yeah, that's right. Very, very massive sort of an operation.
So, you were asked to be on the campus planning committee, and that was the first you thought about it. And
I suppose so. Yes.
It didn't come up in the university committee.
No, I'd say the university committee has, to my knowledge, very seldom talked about anything that was being done in the campus planning committee.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is another big area of things to worry about, and the university committee never was saddled with that one, but, except for having a representative. When I got appointed to do the job, being pretty new at it, I was full of enthusiasm, and I was determined to get in there, and I mean, I wanted to learn all about it and all that sort of stuff, and I found it very frustrating. My letter to Sewell, I think, I can't remember what the letter was, but I probably hit on two things, perhaps only one. But as a member of the campus planning committee, making these momentous decisions, you know, casting these important ballots on major university projects and so on, I was very upset because I never had any information. What would happen? You'd go to a campus planning meeting, and at that time they would hand around a packet of documents.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes there was a lot of information. Sometimes maybe all of the information you'd want would be in the documents, but you'd really have no chance to handle it. You'd come in and sit down, they'd hand this to you, and then they'd start the program. They'd take up the first item, and you were always behind. If you read anything in the documents, it was the expense of not listening to the guy who was talking about it, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And that seemed to me a terribly bad way to handle it, because it did not permit anybody to do any homework. I can't remember whether it was before or after this letter, that I made the I tried to call in advance to the secretary, who was Robert Fox, yeah, and ask him what these different items were. You see, that we'd get a notice of an agenda with no information. I'd ask him what they were about, but basically, I didn't feel that the committee was being provided with the kind of information enough in advance so they could do anything about learning anything or asking questions or of that sort. So that would be one thing I was upset about. Now the other one was a matter of committee structure, and I'm not sure I got on this one at the time, because it's something I got interested in later. It became a little more of a hobby when I got mixed up with appointing committees. But this was a group of representatives and making essentially top level decisions for the campus as a whole. And they were passing for the most part on matters of planning and construction.
Mm-hmm.
And Jim Edsel, who was the director of planning and construction, dominated the meetings pretty much. They were presided over. Now, I wouldn't say dominated. That's probably not right. When I first went, I think it was Bob Atwell who was acting as chairman.
Mm-hmm.
And I think after Atwell left, probably Kurt Wendt, Dean Wendt, took over this job.
Yeah, that's
quite
one
long
of
time.
The things I wanted to ask you.
And I wouldn't say the director of planning and construction,
Jim Edsel.
I wouldn't say that. No, he didn't dominate it. Dominated, but here'd be item three on a proposed building, and Jim would know about it. He'd get up and present what was going on, And he would say, this is the question, and he would say, this is what we want you to vote on, and he'd talk while you were trying to thumb through these pages, mm-hmm. And he would answer questions if asked, but at some stage when things kind of quieted down or slowed down, Jim would say, well, I move approval. Mm-hmm. And then you'd vote, and I thought this was wrong in an organizational sense. In the first place, I thought what the committee was really doing was providing policy that Jim Edsel was supposed to be following. Instead, he was a member of this board, not just as a resource of the committee, but I mean, he was a voting member. And he was making motions and all this kind of stuff, and I had a feeling and carried it out in some respects in other committees later on that. In that case, Jim ought to be on there as a consultant, and he ought to play essentially the role he had been playing, but he should not be voting on his own programs.
Mm-hmm.
So I may have said something of that sort. Most of the questions that come to the campus planning committee, of course, have been worked over very thoroughly and worked out, I suppose, primarily through planning and construction with those people, but I mean, there were a lot of people who worked on them, and had gone through the problems and had made some of the decisions and so on. What came out and what got voted on was sort of the finished product here. This is, we've made all these decisions, and now this is the only one we want to know. Shall we go ahead or not?
Yeah. So you really haven't had much chance to decide what, in fact, problems you're going to get to vote on. Yeah.
Now, that isn't unique to our campus planning committee. That's unique to all kinds of planning at the federal level and state level and so on, because the agency that is charged with the responsibility for doing the work and so on does most of the planning ahead of time, and in the process of planning makes a lot of decisions. So they don't come into hardly any place would they come in as they might have come into the campus planning and say, well, should we build this kind of a building, or should we build that one, or should we put it at that end of the campus or this end of the campus? All those decisions have been made.
Yeah.
And I don't know how you get away from that, but your choices in the campus planning committee were voting for or against it, not a choice between alternatives, which must exist at some stage in the planning operation.
Well, now what about your fellow members? How many, you were new when you started,
yeah.
How many others were new? Or Bach was on the committee, and...
Well, the composition of the committee, part of it was dictated, their ex officio members from other places. This was all incorporated in the laws and regulations.
Well, I know the Regents in 1965 had established what the membership should be.
Yeah, that's right.
And two of them were to be appointed by the university committee. And
two. Okay.
And two by the administrative committee.
By the, that's administrative council, probably.
Yes,
yeah.
That's it.
They were probably two deans.
Well, that, I guess that would account for Bach and Epstein, and were there.
Yeah.
Pound went sometimes.
Well, you see, everybody had an alternate,
mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say that. In the original legislation, to complicate it, some of the members had alternates and some did not. Now, technically, this means that if you don't go and you have a legal alternate, he can go and vote.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't have one designated as an alternate, if he doesn't go, he doesn't vote. There's no vote in that spot. I mean, it's just a plain vacancy.
Did you have an alternate?
That must have been the university committee, must have been the alternate. I mean, the university committee appointed two people, must have been the alternate. We wouldn't have sent two members of the university committee.
Well, I don't think they had to be members of the university committee, but I think they were appointed by the university committee.
I don't recall that. I don't know.
I see. Okay.
Now, the deans were kind of long-term members in the sense that you'd have a dean on there. Dean Pound was on there for quite a long time. I don't remember about Leon Epstein, but what you do, you'd have a dean on there for 5 years and another dean on there also for 5 years, but kind of overlapping.
Mm-hmm.
So when you appointed, when you designated a new dean, you would pick somebody. Probably somebody new that hadn't been on the committee, probably somebody, if you could, who had some of the building. Now, Epstein would have been on there because of all this building we were doing in letters and science.
Mm-hmm.
And the deans would have alternates. So actually you had four deans, maybe only two of them voting at any one time, but you had a sort of a group of four deans that you could call on.
Now Van, yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, Van Potter was one, and he was presumably one of the appointed members then. Do you remember him?
Yes, I know Van, and I can't remember what he was appointed by.
But do you remember him being on the committee? Because he might have been on after you. Yeah, I'm not quite sure. He was going to meetings
remember.
In 1970.
Can't remember.
Uh-huh. Anyway, did any of these other people feel the way you did?
Never heard them talk about it. But, I mean, this is a group that comes together from all over the campus.
Yeah.
They sit down in a room and have a meeting, and then they get up and go.
Mm-hmm.
And your chances of talking to anybody else on the committee about anything were... unless you made the effort, you just didn't do it.
You wouldn't have called up and say, how do you feel about the fact that we never see?
No, I just, I was just full of ambition and so on, so I sat down and wrote a letter to Bill Sewell. I mean, that's the way I did it. I think, though, I would guess that most people would not have had what I was developing is kind of a sense of procedure and organization for answering questions, for making decisions for the university. That is, I'm pretty strong on having a structure, a recognized structure, and certain kind of rules. I mean, it's a question if you're going to have a meeting, just a discussion group, or you're going to conduct it under Robert's rules. I mean, I think the Robert's rules give you a little better way of coming to an orderly, rational sort of a decision.
And this committee wasn't operating on Robert's rules.
Well, I think it was run fairly, well, I think it was run inefficiently. I think it was run efficiently. I mean, they had an agenda and they went through the business. They didn't fool around or anything like that, but they were not concerned about these things of structure that I was saying, well, mm-hmm. by having Jim Edsel on as a voting member.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess somehow I got focused on that kind of early and had that as kind of a hobby for quite a long time, and I don't imagine most people worry about things like that.
He did eventually, you know.
Yeah, we changed it.
Mm.
Yeah, this was changed. That was fairly recently, though. That was when...
Yeah, this was just a couple of years ago.
Kurt Wendt really had come to the end of quite a long tenure as the acting chairman. Now, technically the chancellor is the chairman,
mm-hmm.
or was chairman, and then he had an alternate. And let's see, anyway, we had different kinds of names for these, but basically the chancellor was there as a chairman, except he never went, and it was always his alternate who conducted the meetings. But it was supposed to be a committee that's advisory to the chancellor. I mean, he's supposed to be presiding, and it's a cabinet sort of an operation in which they're discussing these things with him and coming to some kinds of decisions. But when Kurt finished this, we had been talking for quite a long time about the organization of the committee, and the nothing much had been done in revising the rules and so on. So Kurt took this over, and he worked out a structure for this committee that was somewhat different. The planning committee.
And when you say we, who? Because you weren't on the planning committee then.
No, I was talking about the... Well, the university committee and the secretary of the faculty and the chancellor and a few people of this sort of in a group talk about committee organizations and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Kurt was always aware of this, and I've had many discussions with Kurt about what was going on in the campus planning committee and how we could set it up differently and write the legislation differently and so on. And so that's one of the reasons. And when Kurt came up with another proposal, he made some substantial changes. Took out, I think that's when the director of planning and construction was taken off as a regular member and became a consultant.
Mm.
We also reorganized it in part because the faculty senate had been revising these regulations and had indicated. Well, they had defined a faculty committee as a committee that has a majority of faculty members on it, and they did not count faculty members with administrative appointments.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a problem of how are you going to get how are you going to get enough faculty members on this to make it a faculty committee? I used to argue that this wasn't a faculty committee anyway. This is a committee that was set up to advise the chancellor, and this was not a responsibility of the faculty, but of the chancellor, really, to get the kind of a structure he wanted for making his decisions. But they did revise it with the idea of getting more legitimate faculty members on it.
Now, who felt that there should be more? Because apparently, in Fleming's time, somebody raised, the man who's just retired, Dave Fellman. He suggested there should be more faculty involved in campus planning, and Fleming said, well, he didn't think that there should be. And
well, you want to know who pushes on those things. Yeah. Well, who pushes on those things are faculty people who don't have administrative appointments, basically. I mean, this was one of the big hobbies that the university committees had. They wanted to convert everything into a faculty operation.
Hmm. Have they always felt that way, or is that something recent?
Recent. Yeah. They got very, very aggressive. I would say about Clara Penniman's, and about Clara Penniman's era.
Mm-hmm.
That's when they started to rewrite, and they revised what had been university laws and regulations, and they called them faculty rules and regulations.
Now, this is something you were talking about in the other day.
And what this did, among one of the other things, this raised the question of when do you really have a faculty committee? And when we were talking about some of these committees, I argued very strongly that this did not deserve to be listed as a faculty committee and come under the rules of a faculty mm-hmm. committee, because it was not.
Mm-hmm.
It was basically an administrative...
Do you mean it was not or couldn't be? Was your point
it
that
had it... not been. It had not been previously.
Uh-huh.
It had been ambiguous. I mean, the campus planning committee, who nobody ever asked a question, is this a faculty committee or mm-hmm. is it an administrative committee, and so on. It just operated. These mm-hmm. are the people on it. It just operated. We never raised the issue until you get very aggressive about what is the faculty's business and what isn't.
Mm.
And then the faculty wants to be in on everything, and the administrators, I suppose what Fleming was saying to Dave Fellman, was that, well, this is really an administrative job. I like to have faculty on it, so they tell me, but they're not making the decision. I am. So this was sort of, but this effort to get more faculty people on there, I think was one of the things that Kurt was working on. And he did it in various ways by, I think he now has representatives of each of the divisions, and he has ex officio members from some of the other committees and so on, so that you build up the number of faculty members who do not have administrative appointments.
Mm-hmm.
And that's good.
That's interesting. That would be a question to talk to him about, as to how, whether he was doing this because the faculty wanted it, or whether he thought it was a good idea himself.
I don't know. I think the best way to do it, Kurt is an old-time faculty member. He knows all about this. I mean, he's been a dean more than a faculty member, or at least in recent times, but he's worked with the faculty structure and all that, so I think he's comfortable with it, the way Ed Young was. But I honestly think that when he was chairman, both with his engineering know-how and the kind of an interest he took in all these things, I would think probably the decisions that came out of the campus planning committee might just as well have been made by Kurt Wendt and three or four other selected people who really had the savvy and the know-how and the judgment on these matters. And going through the faculty, in a sense, is running through a gauntlet trying to persuade them to do the things mm-hmm. that you know they ought to do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether Kurt would ever think of it that way, but I used to talk with him on things. I'd say, well, how about this question? And he'd tell me what his views were, and I'd say, well, should we do it or not, you know, and so on. And he'd tell me, and I thought he was pretty good most of the time. Very good at handling meetings.
Yes, everybody says that.
Kept the business going, did not cut anybody off.
Even though he wasn't chairman. I mean, because Atwell seems to have been...
Atwell was chairman, yeah, but not for such a long time, you see. This was probably in 1967. I was on the campus planning committee as a university committee representative.
Mm-hmm.
Or was it the year before, 67?
You were at some meetings in 68 and 69, and I think
oh, yes.
you were some in 70.
Well, I was a university committee representative 1 year, or part of 1 year anyway. Then when I became chairman of the university committee, I did not go. I got somebody else to go.
Oh, I see.
So I didn't
That's
go at all when I was when I'm not in that.
Mm-hmm.
Then when I became secretary of the faculty the following year,
mm-hmm.
then the secretary was a member. I think the secretary was actually listed as a member
yes,
of the university
was.
Committee.
Mm-hmm. That was one of them was named by the regents.
So I went as that kind of a member.
And did you go regularly?
Oh yes, I went regularly. I think I went regularly for several years. But sometimes I would send Doug Dales, who was the assistant secretary of the faculty, particularly after I lost interest in it and did not think I was accomplishing anything by spending those long long hours in those meetings. Mm-hmm. Sometimes Doug would go. Some of the meetings were a little more interesting than others.
I could see that from looking at the minutes.
Yeah, sure, that's right.
Well, there were a number of issues that were at the fore in that late 50s, 68, 69, late 60s. I don't know, which ones would you pick up if I didn't name them? Do you remember some of the things that were concerning the committee?
Well, concerning the committee and how it functions and so on, one of them that sticks in my mind is unions out.
Uh-huh.
This was a messy one in a procedural sense. I don't know how long we had talked about an addition to the union facility, a separate building, but part of the union structure. But that's probably been in the mill for a long time. We came in with a proposal. And the proposal was pretty well developed by a building committee. I'm sorry, I can't remember the name of the chairman of this, but he came in and he talked to the campus planning committee. This is what they wanted to do, and by that time they had an architect working on it, so they had the architectural conceptual drawings, and they knew where the location was. They knew quite a lot about it. We're getting to the point where you not only quit just doing your planning, you actually start to do something and finish the working drawings and things like that. I mean, you were getting to the point where we had to make a commitment. So you had this group that were coming in telling us what to do, and this is a plan that they developed and so on. And then you had Porter Butts coming in as a representative of the union trustees. And he was all against it. And this was one of those meetings where you, kind of a simple-minded member, come into the meeting and you hear some people saying this is the way we ought to do it, and you hear somebody else saying you can't. Would you excuse me
yeah.
a minute? I think I thought this was a horrible example of something because you didn't know who to believe.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think some of the explanation of this really was in terms of the personalities. I mean, I'm not sure how much of this was Porter's idea, but after all, he was there as a representative, you see, of the group that's supposed to be the trustees of the union, and the people who raise the money, and the people who've got all kinds of important interests in this blame thing, and coming in and opposing this plan that has been offered did not seem to me the right thing to do if you were asking people to vote for it.
Now, this was not for the Union South, it had to do with the third floor, isn't that right?
I can't remember. No, I thought it was Union South.
The whole thing. I mean,
I thought it was involving the concept or something like that. Some of the general plans. I'm not sure about that one. You're going to have to look that one up.
I thought it had to do with adding whether they added a floor, but maybe
it
not.
May
anyway,
have been.
The,
it may
the
have
point
been.
Will be the same, I guess.
Well, I don't remember the facts, and so my comments probably are a little irrelevant in some ways on that respect. But I thought this was the kind of thing that you should have cleaned up, this kind of a disagreement, before you brought the thing to this uninstructed
mm-hmm.
campus planning committee to vote on it. Or in the presentation you said there's opposing views on this. Now we've got to balance these out and so on, but you had everybody, you had the administration. Porter came in and he raised some questions that had bothered me about the whole thing. And then he indicated that the group he represented were opposed to it. And I did not feel that I was in a position either to vote for it or to vote against it. I mean, one is just as bad as the other. But, I thought this was something that should have been handled better before we got into the campus.
Yes, you don't often have a yes or no confrontation in that kind of committee.
No, no. I think ordinarily, if anything, it was usually too smooth. That is, you'd come in here and you'd have a presentation. This is what we want to do, and it sounds as though everybody's got all the problems ironed out, and here's the thing, and all we want is your vote yes signature sort of a thing. But we didn't have it on that one.
And Porter lost, I gather.
Well, yes, and I guess from what I've sort of picked up, he probably deserved to lose. I'm not sure that he was on the right side of that particular issue. Besides, that becomes one of those issues after a while. You judge it more in terms of whether the union actually works or not, mm-hmm. and apparently
yeah.
it's doing very well, so it must have been right. But that was not a good one. Now, I can't remember the other issues. The campus planning committee played some kind of a role, and I expect this would have been back in 1965 or something like that, when we got all concerned about starting up a new campus.
Oh, yes,
growth of the
out
campus,
on the,
this kind
west
of thing.
Side.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I do not know exactly what their role was in this one, and I cannot represent it. I didn't pay much attention to that. That was the university committee that was more prominent in presenting this kind of an issue to the faculty. But in expanding the campus, the campus planning committees always had quite a large role. I don't know what they did with the with planning the new hospital and some of those things, but those are things that you hear about. Well, sure they
mm-hmm.
were. This was a major undertaking.
One of the problems was the libraries at that time, the library
yeah.
addition against the physical sciences library. That was being discussed, which should come first, which should have priority. There was quite a meeting. Now, you were at that one, I know. Do you remember that one?
No, not really. I don't really remember any questions involving the priorities, the building priorities, although it sticks in my mind that, yes, this is one of the things that went through the campus planning committee, because building priorities were sort of built up. Within a college, here are the different kinds of projects they want. In agriculture, they'd want to make an animal husbandry building, and they'd want a social sciences building, and all these things. Within the college, you would somehow come up with some kind of a priority system.
Mm-hmm.
And these all had to be put together, and I think they were all put together, and at one stage accepted formally by the campus planning committee as the building priorities for the campus, I suppose for a year at a time. So I think there was a document that was acted on by the campus planning committee in which you had the building priorities
mm-hmm.
for the
yes,
whole
there
campus.
Was.
And I don't recall any very, I may have missed the important things that went on in the committee, you know, but I don't recall any great arguments over the priorities in which these things are going to be listed on, at least in the campus planning committee.
I see. It was a question, I guess Memorial Library had been put first, and the engineering the physical sciences library been put seventh, and there was a good deal of discussion.
I don't recall that. What you do, you have a group like this, and somebody comes in to make a representation to them, and it's a very effective in presenting a case. Why, you have to sway them in their decision. So it's possible that you've got somebody from engineering or something that come in there and change his priorities.
Mm-hmm.
I think the library committees have usually been in favor of the ones that I had anything to do with. That would be way back in those days. We're always pretty strong for Central Library, the Memorial Library, the Central mm-hmm. Library
yes.
sort of facility, rather than these separate colleges.
I know Luke Kaplan felt that the engineering
College had gotten all of its other buildings first and put its library low down on its priority list, and then when it got all the others, then it was ready to get a library.
Well, Lou was probably right. I think the engineering people have, on the whole, done pretty well in the campus planning thing. I mean, after all, they're the planners and the engineers. And, they probably are better at presenting their cases. And maybe they got better cases, for all I know. So Lou may have been right in that.
Well, what about the parking? That goes on interminably, of course, but just around this time, there was a question of, for instance, whether Observatory Drive should be closed. Do you remember that, Stu? And there were the question, some people wanted more parking space, and apparently they still weren't charging fees for parking in parking lots on campus.
Well, I think probably the central, and as I recall it, it sticks in my mind Atwell is one of these people. But the administration and some of the, probably planning and construction and so on, really saw the solution to campus transportation problem in getting rid of the automobiles. So they were talking about closing off Bascom Hill.
Mm-hmm.
And I do remember discussions of this sort, quite impassioned. We didn't do it, so I guess you must remember why you didn't?
I haven't been able to find
why
out.
We didn't close it off?
I've gotten to the point where they decided to close it off temporarily.
That's right.
That is, Helen White had been completed, and they were ready to open it, but they said, let's at least wait until the Regents have had a meeting and can just guess it.
Well, one of the reasons they didn't, that's quite an artery of traffic. People there want to get out the other end of campus, and that's the way they do it.
Mm-hmm.
And we were not making it any easier to use University Avenue and using these other things at that time. I remember one of the things, questions that came up there, when they built the Helen White building, it crowded the old layout of that road up over the hill, and it was always a miserable way to get up the hill, and made it necessary to make some much sharper turns there.
Mm-hmm.
We were at the same time talking about taking buses over, and so one of the questions was whether the buses could get over there with the way it had been laid out, because what you'd done is increased the grade and sharpened the corners on this thing very much. But that apparently worked out all right. Somebody had done some figuring. I remember asking that of Kirk Wendt in the campus planning committee.
Asking him
whether this had been really been worked out so that we knew it was feasible to continue to have a road up through there after having built the building out where it was.
And what was your own view about it?
I didn't know. I just knew it was a bad road to begin with, but the curves didn't used to be as abrupt as they are now.
Mm-hmm.
And they were not compacted so much so that the grade actually was not as steep.
Mm-hmm. Well, I meant your own view as to whether it should be closed or not.
Oh. I don't recall. I don't think I was in favor of closing it.
Remember how you felt about parking space on campus? It was
I don't know.
Well, I know the faculty had its committee for advising the campus planning committee, and then there was the traffic committee. Mm-hmm. And apparently these two were pretty much at loggerheads.
Well, I suppose since I've always had a car and always wanted to park on the campus and so on, I've always been in favor of having parking places for faculty members. I always thought it was silly to charge them for, now, I mean, this is such an old, out-of-date idea that I kind of hate to mention, but I know for a long time, I thought you should not charge faculty members.
Mm-hmm.
See, we went on one where the parking was supposed to pay for itself. Well, I thought this was not very much different from asking a man to pay rent on his office at the university. I mean, there are certain things the university provided for its people, like parking and offices and that sort of thing. So on all that issue, I suppose I was what you'd call a conservative in this. I didn't want to charge anything, and I wanted to provide it. What we have done, and I think we continue to do it, is accentuate our own parking problems, because what you do is do your building by
tearing up a parking lot and putting a building on it. A building that requires more parking at the same time that you're cutting it down. And so it got steadily worse. And I guess I, if asked at any one stage, I would have said, as a matter of principle, you ought to provide the parking as part of your plans of providing the building, rather than taking it out of the pool of existing space.
Yes. Well, that was it. That was one of the proposals.
They went through some kinds of motions, but they never seemed to carry it out in any meaningful sense, because we just continued to go in this direction, as far as I can tell. We like the city. I mean, this is not unique to the university. This is what happens when you build up, when you build higher, more buildings and higher and greater capacity and concentrate things. And, You lose things like the open parking lots. Now, there's a great deal of talk about ramps. Mm-hmm. And this was in part separate from buildings, but it was also related to buildings. So when we were talking about Vilas Hall, I think there was a big discussion of whether there was going to be a ramp on the corner over there across the street and all that sort of thing. I don't know what happened to that.
Yes, I've seen references to that too.
But this is one of the big
issues.
The
1100 block, is it?
Yeah. And this University Square development in their parking was part of this hassle.
Mm-hmm.
And so on. I don't know what ever happened to the idea of ramps, because we're getting pretty expensive parking when you park it all just on the lower level and on high priced land and so on. Limited. But I would never have been in favor of solving the parking and automobile problem by just banishing them from the campus. It seemed pretty unreasonable.
They went pretty far in that direction for a while.
Earlier.
Mm-hmm, I guess
right.
It didn't go through. I think that was one of Leo Jacobson's.
I think that's right.
Efforts.
I think that's right. No. We never, as a university, had enough control over all of the elements that enter into this sort of thing. We never had any control over city transportation.
That's
now,
what
you want people
I was
to,
hoping you would talk about that.
If you want people to leave their cars home, you've got to give them some way to get down to the university. I mean, if you want to be...
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
If you don't leave them a place to end up down there, why, you've got to get them... And this involves some kind of adequate city bus transportation. We're still working at that one. If the city had shown what seems to me its present interest in public transportation back in those days, it might have done more on the campus in terms of cutting back transportation. But there wasn't much evidence of it in those days.
Yes, I hadn't thought of that. That's an interesting point. That if people can't get into the campus except by cars, then you have to have some place to put the cars.
That's essentially it.
Mm.
I think.
Mm.
I think it still is. I think it's still a very critical thing.
Were you aware of the state, its, the effect of its policies at all on the campus plans?
The State Building Commission was always considered to be an obstacle to everything the university wanted to do. And I suppose that was the way it was presented to us, because these would be people who would be trying to develop plans for the university with one eye on the State Building Commission. And this is the way it really ought to be done, fellas, but they won't okay it, and they will do some of these things. I don't know that I could give you any specifics on this, but the State Building Commission always passed on these things. We had a member of the state. We had a state member on the campus planning committee.
That's right, the engineer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And this was partly because he, as far as I know, yes, he used to come some. But as far as I know, this was an effort to sort of bridge that that gap between one body deciding and another one second-guessing it.
Mm-hmm.
But the State Building Commission had a lot of other things on its mind, too. We'd come up with a building priorities list and so on, but that wasn't the same as saying we had an okay to do them. We always had to get an okay in terms of approving these proposals, you see, and that came from outside. Both the money and I think the State Building Commission had to okay them as projects. I do not remember at this stage things where they said no to something we badly wanted to do or gave us some ideas that we had rejected before and all that. But it's a different group.
When somebody in the administration commented that he thought the campus planning committee was getting irresponsible in the late 60s because it couldn't, in fact, its decisions weren't going to be final, they were always going to be acted upon by the state and in relationship to the other campuses, so that what they would do is merely give everybody's request for a building instead of passing on them first, within limits, of course, knowing.
Well, I'm not sure about that. I do suppose that at any time that you have reason to think that your decisions are really going to only be, well, they may be listened to, but they won't necessarily be honored, why, you probably get a little less responsible than some of the kinds of, you don't agonize over the decision too much. You say, well, you give them both, because we don't know which ones they're going
to
be. Sure,
yeah, and you also don't create so much hard feeling on campus, since you can give everybody,
So that could be. We got whipsawed two ways on this, because when you began to get the first merger under Fred Harrington, when we began to have these other campuses, and the question to build here or to build two new campuses, for God's sakes, you see, this was this complicated our decision making on the campus. About all we could do was present our own views and hope that we got something like a fair share.
How'd you feel about that?
The merger?
You yourself and, well, the other people you talked to, just the fact that it was here, was Madison was going to have that is, there would be two rival and accept campuses.
Well, I cannot tell you. I mean, you can imagine a lot of things after the fact that may not have been present at the time. I don't know that anybody had any very great doubts about this. They may have. I don't think that people took Milwaukee very seriously, because Milwaukee wasn't much of a school when we first started our thing out. You know, I mean, there was never any question where the University of Wisconsin was. It was here at Madison, and then we got these ideas about Kenosha and Green Bay. Well, we didn't really know what was going on, but we knew they didn't have any students there yet, and they weren't offering courses, and they weren't doing this and that, so you didn't really take them as any very real competitors, except that people who were following the budgets and building construction and so on were quite aware that a lot of the money was being diverted.
Yeah, I should think so.
We didn't know about that. But I guess I would have to say I don't recall at this time being very, very greatly exercised over it in the same way that I was exercised later about this second merger, the second bigger merger sort of system, and aware of the impact of that on our operations.
That was more of a concern, was it, or was
I was more concerned about it the second go around than I was the first time. It was more extreme, of course, in the sense that we were more diluted by more different institutions and somewhat more competitive institutions with their own ideas and some of those things. But no, I don't know. I expect, though, this was one of the big things in the campus planning committee. Because when you get up to building priorities, a document comes out of Madison, of the Madison Campus Planning Committee, and then you find out later what happened to this when it went on to somebody else. And this would be, I suppose, the equivalent of the system at that time would make some decisions about the Madison's needs as against Kenosha, and then the building commission and everybody else get in the act, and sometimes it was not very recognizable what you came up with eventually.
Yeah, I think that's true. You know, it's funny we're talking about this, and Was the campus planning committee at all affected by the things that were going on in the, you know, the protest movement? There's never a hint about it in the minutes.
No. Campus planning committee was, and probably is, about as professionally pure an organization as we have. In the, they knew their job, and they stuck to their job, which was planning buildings and planning sidewalks and doing something about bicycles and things like that, without being diverted on statements on the war in Vietnam or anything of the sort. So this kind of this
well,
kind
I mean, and would their plans be affected? Would they? I know there was one discussion of whether they should have kiosks on campus, and they said, well, we've got to be careful what we
yeah.
do in Bassman Hill. We don't want to offend anybody.
Yeah.
But that's a very slight thing. But
well, I think it entered into the mall, the lower campus mall. It's now the State Street Mall sort of thing, but
mm-hmm.
in the campus end. I think that these discussions, I think that the campus disorders had something to do with that.
Thinking
because
that they should
well, I think that most people, it occurred to most people, why provide a staging area for more for more riots? You see,
oh,
this is where they're, you know what I mean.
Well, so they wanted to oppose it then. They opposed it.
Well, I don't know, Laura. See, you're reckless when you talk about they or what other
yeah,
people
okay.
did and so on. But I know this occurred to me, and
mm-hmm.
I know it's occurred to other people.
Mm-hmm.
Why provide a better place for them to have rallies to? Because when they have a rally, then they march in one direction or another and break things up.
Mm.
And so I think this probably entered into it.
So my
the kiosks. I remember this. We had a few run-ins with environmentalists, whatever they were called in those days, but the people who wanted to preserve natural some of the natural amenities. As against the people who wanted to develop it, you know, and put in the early discussions over preserving, is it Muir Knoll? Baskin Hill
woods mm-hmm.
and those things. It was quite a little of that, which I think had that had some of the elements of the protests in it.
Hmm.
But I don't remember anything in the campus planning committee in those disorderly years being very directly reflective of what was going on outside.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would imagine not. One slight example would be that apparently the legislature was not very fond of Memorial Library and called it the Hippie Library because the hippies used to assemble in the mall.
Yeah.
There was fear that they would reject the Memorial Library addition because of this. They didn't, in fact. But that was the sort
yeah.
of thing that was raised. And
I don't know whether this was taken very seriously by... Of course, we were all concerned about what was happening to everything in the university, in the sense that whatever the university wanted was being threatened by the disorders. I mean, anything you wanted from the legislature in the way of money or authorization or anything, this could be affected by it.
Yeah.
But I don't remember this being considered a... There was a proposal that I think was decided in part on this basis, which is kind of an add-a-student thing. There was a talk of some kind of a big recreational facility near the dorms.
Yes, that's
Jim Bowers was the chairman of a committee that was working on this. And this was not at a time when anybody was prepared to give the students anything.
Mm-hmm.
And that may have been a decisive factor, of course. I don't know how it would have come out anyway in the priorities and the competition for money and so on. So I'm not sure that it was lost because of that, but I think this was a factor. We didn't talk too much about doing things for the students in those days.
Yeah, I can imagine that.
Yeah.
What the legislature to cope with. Could you say about the some of the people on the committee and you spoke of Atwell when we were talking earlier. What sort of a person he was and how effective he was in the committee or not?
Well, I was always very much impressed by Bob Atwell. He, in presiding at these meetings, he, I mean, he had good personality, good presence. He, a little sense of humor and this kind of thing. He was at ease, and he always seemed to know. He always seemed to be very savvy about what the issues were and the facts and all these things of these programs. And I guess I thought he was a good chairman. I strongly suspect he had his own ideas about how these things should have been done and so on. So he probably, many of the proposals that came into the campus planning committee may have had quite an imprint of his own judgment on them. That wouldn't show up, you see. But I thought he was good. On the whole, I think they've had pretty good chairmen of anything I've known in the campus planning committee. These are knowledgeable and able men, and able to rise to the demands of that particular job.
Was Jim Cleary ever? Did you encounter him at all?
Yeah, I knew Jim. I worked quite closely with Jim. Those are back in the. Well, let's see. I was on the university committee, and Jim was the vice chancellor for academic affairs, and he was taking most of the brunt of dealings with the faculty and the faculty meetings and things like that. So we worked very closely on that sort of thing. I was sorry to see him go.
Was he on the faculty before he started doing?
Yes, that? I think he had been. I think way back he had been on the faculty. And I expect this would have been, it sticks in my mind he was in English, but maybe not.
Really?
But he worked, yes, he had a faculty position, I think junior faculty. I mean, I don't think he was had ever acquired a professorship or anything like that. Mm. But he had been on the faculty and had done his work on parliamentary procedure. This had been done as part of his professional faculty sort of business. So he came in with that kind of qualifications. But he had long ago, I think, converted to 100% administrator or so on.
Yeah. Well, you know, I see these names, Atwell and Engman is another one, and they seem to be up there in the administration, and they correspond with each other.
Yeah,
and
everybody does.
It's hard to see how they, I mean, they're not chancellors, and they're not faculty, so they're sort of in the background, and yet they seem to have quite a lot of power.
Well, that's true now, Laura.
Yes.
An administration you put together of people that you put in charge of different elements, areas of business. And if you have a strong if you have a kind of a strong administrative team, these are the guys who put their heads together on all kinds of things. For everything involves money, you see. Everything involves academic matters and appointments and so on. So you do have a lot of this. And if you really want to know what's going on in the university, there's about three or four offices or people that you could follow around and listen to for a week or so, and you'd hear all this. Other than the chancellor, I mean he's one of them. But I mean, there are key men in these administrations, and they do they get involved in all kinds of things.
Well, certainly when you look through files, where you see the very close and day-to-day correspondence among them.
You want to close this off for a minute?
All right.
And decide where we're going?